This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast. Welcome to the podcast, my friend. I'm so excited to talk to you. One, just because we share such a similar story in regards to our entrance into the lo-fi scene, but two, I'm just excited to hear your story, man. And I was digging through your catalogs, both your Electro Swing project and the Lo-Fi Sax project, and I'm just excited to talk to you about your story. But just to kick this off, man, how's everything going
fine.
With you?
It's the end of the day here, so we have 8 hours, I think, time difference. So I had a long day already because I have to rise up quite early because I'm working as a teacher in school. And so, that's my everyday job. And but I'm happy to be here and... We share this conversation.
Yeah, well, I'm happy you're here, man. What do you teach?
Yes, I'm working in a school for handicapped children, for mentally handicapped children. And yeah, I never planned to be a teacher. As so many things in my life just happened and I took the chance to do it. And because I studied music therapy, and I was working in that school also when I was a student. And over the years, and as you know, I'm not the youngest anymore. I'm working now, I think, over 30 years or 20 years, 30 years in the school. Also, my job description changed because at the beginning I was only the music therapist and taking the kids out of the classes and working with them in a one-to-one setting or small groups. And then the school approached me if I can do also lessons for the whole classes. And I decided why not. I was only the music teacher for the school. And we have something very special because it's a mixed school. We have 5 classes with the handicapped children, and we have 5 classes which are elementary school, and all in one house, and I'm the music teacher for all the kids in the house. And I'm not working anymore in the music therapy thing as in the beginning, so now I have a full job as teacher, as support teacher with my colleague. And yeah, but I'm very happy now that it worked out like that.
Yeah. Well, Jürgen, what an important role to have. And so I had a really good friend that I grew up with. He ended up having, he was diagnosed with juvenile Huntington's mm-hmm. disease, which is a really nasty neurological disease. And I remember it was probably, I'm not sure when it was, maybe like 2017, but I had brought my laptop home and my MIDI keyboard home and had Ableton open, and I just created a backing track in the key of C, you know, just so he could get on the MIDI keyboard and just jam away. And I remember the joy in his face to be able to create music was absolutely incredible. So you're playing an important role, and I'm sure you're positively impacting a lot of kids' lives, Jürgen. So that's a very, very commendable job.
Yes, I that was also if we jump right in, because I had several times in my life the possibility, or there were opportunities. I got a major deal with EMI one time, and then you start thinking, will I do the music thing whole time or just part time and doing my job in the school or work with the children? And I was also touring with my band back in the years quite a lot. But I always, when it came to this point to make this decision, I felt that I will miss something if I stop working with the kids. Because when I'm on stage, it's important for me, and I'm like being on stage and having a crowd going crazy and you know, all this energy that flows. But after the concert, you go in your hotel room and and the next day, maybe also alone or with the band it's not so, I don't know the word, consistent or from... When I work with the children, I see over the long term the development, and it's more satisfying because I know I put also my expertise and it makes more sense for me that I could help in the development of these kids. Then it's this feeling when I have a concert crowd or the audience and I make people happy for 2 hours, and with the other job it's I really make them have a good impact on their lives, and it's for longer lasting. I hope you get what I mean.
I 100% do, and Jürgen, I think that's a very important thing to discuss, because a lot of I started chasing music as a full-time dream at about the age of 20, and touring was all I was thinking about, and that was before entering the lo-fi scene, and I had a pretty one-dimensional look at what I wanted to do within my career. And now, 9 years later from that moment, having the podcast, having lo-fi projects, still being able to perform live, recording saxophone for other artists, and having consistency within my life. I have a fiance. I get to run ultra marathons. Sometimes I get to travel. Sometimes I don't. I think it's important for... At some point, artists are going to realize, like, it's not, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. Like, going on tour isn't necessarily going to feel the gaps that you're feeling, and those lonely moments in the hotel room are certainly real. And so I think it's important to realize that. And so Jürgen, I guess let's back up, man. Let's back up to like you and your late teens and your 20s. I want to hear the whole musical story in this journey, because that what you just described in regards to being fulfilled through helping the children, like, that's something potentially other artists miss out on because we're chasing the goal of being a superstar or whatever, and not necessarily feeling fulfilled as you do. So take us back, man. Take us back to the beginning of your musical journey.
Yeah, the musical journey began when I was a 6-year-old child. I learned the recorder, and I grew up in a quite musically family. My mother played the violin. My father was a big fan of classical music, so I grew up with Mozart and Beethoven playing on his sound system. And and my sisters also play the recorder, and later the younger sister went to cello, playing cello, and the older sister, or I'm the oldest, but the middle sister, she stayed with the recorder and also studied music later. And but music was always a fun factor for me. So I never had for myself the feeling, I want to do this professional, because I always had this, I was always thinking I'm not good enough, or I'm not practicing enough, and there is such pressure to be on top level, especially in music also, the virtuosity, and you always compare to others. And I was thinking, I like playing music, and I like improvising, and I play by ear and everything. I started jamming with my recorder to tape recorder or record players, for myself. But I never was thinking I'm good enough to have a professional career. And after learning the recorder, I switched to clarinet, because I wanted to play the saxophone also at that time. But at that time, people always said saxophone is not for a 10-year-old or 11-year-old child. It's too heavy, and it's you can't play it. Start with the clarinet. Now I would say that's wrong completely, because saxophone is much easier than playing the clarinet. And if you're big enough to carry the weight and with your fingers, I was always one of the tallest guys in my class, so this was not the problem. Yeah, but I don't regret it, because clarinet is also a very nice instrument, and so I got also this classical education, playing also orchestra jobs and so on. And with 17, I got my first saxophone, because I had to decide whether my parents pay for the driver's license or for the saxophone. I've chosen the saxophone and paid my driver's license myself. Yeah, and at that time, I stopped the music school. I had no teacher for the saxophone, so I learned it by myself. Just with clarinet, you have the same or quite similar embouchure. And I started to a jazz band with friends, and all of them, we had no clue at all what is jazz, but we were, we are doing a jazz band. And so we met every week and we jammed, and it was learning by doing. And and I did this several years, because I really liked playing with other people, jamming and playing in bands. And I didn't like very much sitting at home and doing my practice work and so on. So, And therefore, the decision after school came, what can I do professionally? I was interested in psychology. And but in Germany, we have a system when your marks of the final exam isn't good enough. And I had an average it was a good average, but for psychology, it had to be better. So you have to wait some years, and then you get the chance to enter the psychology studies. But I didn't want to wait, and I made my civil service. It's you can choose in Germany, because I grew up in Germany, and I have And you can choose whether you go to the army or you do civil service. And so I decided for the civil service. And this was my first experience also in this field with mentally handicapped children, because I worked in a school at the time. And it was crazy, because there I had some Turkish kids, and they came with their tablas and so on. And I learned from them some Turkish melodies, and we were jamming with the kids, and it was so much fun. And I realized what power you've got when you're doing music together, also for kids who, they don't live an easy life, or they have handicaps and are not really good in school, but they play the drums like crazy, and it was real joy for me. And so I had the plan, I want to study music therapy, and that's and at that time Vienna was nearly the only possibility to do this. So I decided to move to Vienna and to start to study this music therapy. And so I came to Vienna.
It's incredible, especially since you had the initial interest in psychology, and then you were able to find yourself moving into music therapy. What a great infusion.
Yeah, it was the combination of both fields that interested me at that time. And and then I did my studies here in Vienna, and I also played jazz with some study colleagues from studies, and we did street music and everything, and just for fun also. And after I was in the when the music therapy studies were nearly finished, I had a little crisis, because I was feeling I'm too young to be a music therapist and work the responsibility in medical institutions or something like this. And I wanted to improve my musical skills. And so I got the chance at the Music and University in Vienna to study saxophone. And you have to do an entry test. And I had no teacher. I was completely autodidactic. But it worked out. I got this. I succeeded. Wow. And so I was at the university studying saxophone with a very good teacher. Maybe he's also a bit known in the jazz scene, in also internationally, because he worked with Carla Bley and Steve Swallow, and is one of the well-known Austrian saxophone players. His name is Wolfgang Puschnick, and he's also a very nice guy. And and for me, it was the first time I got a teacher regularly on a weekly basis. And but I also realized that my skills are really not where they should be, because they installed this study completely new, and we were only two students. And the next year, students, and there were young cats from Upper Austria, and I heard them playing, and I was thinking, wow, they play on a level I think I will not reach after I finished my study. And but my teacher, he said, Jürgen, don't bother. I'm convinced you will make your way, just the way you are or the way you play. You don't have to be the next John Coltrane or playing hard bop on bebop style. And to be honest, I never was interested to to play like Charlie Parker. I like the music, everything, but I also realized this is not my, that it's not the music that I really feel when I'm playing. And also this virtuosity and doing all the scales and bebop licks and so on. From me, and that was the thing I took with me from the music therapy, because there you work with music very simplified. We had one exercise. You get 5 tones on the piano, and you have to improvise only with these 5 tones. But while you improvise, you have to tell your emotions or a story, or you have to get your message out to the others. And this is very important. And it's and I realized this is what I really learned, and I think I'm capable also to do it. Also, when you do street music, we had also this experience. We were playing and doing show, and nobody was interested. We were always we were acting like crazy, and then we said, doesn't work today. Nobody stops and listens. We gathered together very, very, with no space in between us, because we were only 3, bass player, melodica player, the piano player played the melodica, and me with the saxophone. And we did a free improvisation. So very slow and melancholic, and maybe you can think boring or something, but we were communicating in that moment, and everybody was in his person or in his presence. And when we finished and we look up, people were standing really around. It was a real circle with 50 persons listening to our music. Wow. And this was like, there. And we felt also while we were playing that something magical happened, because it fits very well together, and we were communicating and so. And that was the thing that suddenly interests also the audience. And that's a quality which is not dependent on your virtuosity at all. Sometimes it's easier also when you play simple melodies that you can connect with other people. And that's a very important thing I learned on this.
Yeah. Well, Jürgen, that's so special, because similarly, I did jazz band in high school for a little bit, but in college, most of my experience was symphonic band. So I never did jazz lessons. So I've always played, a little bit more slowly. And even when I play with electronic music, I would say it's more symphonic. So playing and orchestral, like especially big dubstep tunes, you know, there's string sections and brass sections. And I like playing just legato notes over it, just helping build the symphony. And so it's really cool that you guys paused and said, let's try something new. And it was resonating with the listeners. And just for time frame, so would this have been the early 90s? Yes.
Early, mid-90s, yes.
Yeah. Well, because I'm just trying to think of what, I guess, like what other music was around at that time that allowed for that style of improvisation that you guys were doing that really allowed it to resonate.
It was a little bit direction also, maybe free jazz, or there was no, or what we also do in music therapy is, because in Vienna they teach music therapy, it's very active. So you don't play for a passive patient or client, but but you do music together with your and you try to establish a relationship via the tones or the music and the interaction you do musically. So you don't have to speak and you can communicate emotionally, and that's cool. The thing we put also in the music, because also the other two guys were studying music therapy, so I think that was the special thing about this. And yeah, and this is still my philosophy when I'm doing music. It's not the perfection. It's reaching out or telling other people my emotions, or if there is interaction, if you're playing together with other people, yeah, to be present in your playing and also to resonate with what is coming from your counterpart, and and developing something together. And if this works out well, yeah, this is really magic somehow.
Yeah, well, and I don't want to skip any part of your story, but what you just said is it's such a great descriptor for what we have in the lo-fi scene, and being able to share that with artists all over the world, which is absurd. But let's keep going on on the timeline of your story, because I want to hear how this all works out.
I was at university studying saxophone, and during that time I also found my band. I played for decades together. It's a swing band, and we did this old school 40s, 50s rhythm and blues, rock and roll, pre-rock and roll and swing, like Louis Jordan, Nat King Cole, Cab Calloway, this stuff. And with this band, we toured also all over Europe and played big conventions where all this, maybe you think also in America, there was this swing movement in the around the 2000, Lindy Hop and so on. And we, this band was a part of this movement, you can say, and we played all over Europe, France, Switzerland, Italy, Germany. Yeah, it was
great
experience. And for me, it was also a good experience, because I wasn't only the sax player in this band and doing the leads or the brass section together with the, because it was only 6-person band, so I was the only reed or brass instrument. But we arranged our stuff that the guitar player played also the brass sections. So we had a really fat sound with only 6 people. And and our singer was American, so he was really authentic and he's great, great guy. And it was a really, really great experience to do this. And and that was my life at that time. I also, when I finished studying after 6 years, I think, I continued playing with this band, and I continued also working in the school I'm still working in. But at that time only, I worked 2 days and only 5 hours a day. So, and the rest was living as a musician and
incredible. Wow. So you're able to work 2 days a week at the music therapy school, and then also touring
on, mostly on the weekends, and shorter tours. We didn't go for a week or a monthly tour. It was always this one night stands, or even we drove thousands of kilometers in the band bus and just for one concert. But it's also amazing, because the chemistry of the guys I played together was also, yeah, it's not so often that a group of people matches this good. And although we were all very different characters, but when we were together, it was the band, and it was like a family, and we knew everything about each other, sometimes more than our wives or girlfriends. Mm-hmm. But it was also the long, when you're on this trip, the when you talk to each other, and it's really deep and also philosophical, and it was really a great mm-hmm. experience to have this. And yeah, and I got married first time and built my family, and I don't know how I managed that everything I could, also with the finances, that everything works out. but somehow it did.
Yeah.
Because the work in school and also my lessons, I had also saxophone students at that time. This was the regularly income, and playing gigs with the mm-hmm. band or also other musical projects was the plus, was what was coming in. And and sometimes it was really a bit hard to make the living, but I was always confident that even if you face hard times, it's only a phone call away that you get another gig and you get another amount of money, and mm-hmm. and I was lucky that it worked out like this, with no big problems.
Yeah. Well, and Jürgen, that's so inspiring to hear, because a majority of the listeners of this podcast are trying to do music full time in whatever capacity that they can, whether that's like for me, the combination of multiple different projects that all have to do with music in some sort of way. And sometimes it is difficult to have that faith if you're going through financial hard times, and you have to like, okay, trust the process and keep going. And so you mentioned that you didn't know how you managed it and everything worked out, but how did you navigate those waters, man? Like how did you just allow yourself to remain to have the faith of like, man, this might be a bad month, but I know things are going to turn around and everything will be okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's also, I always had the anchor in that I knew my parents would help me if there's no way for me at all, I will get the support mm-hmm. by them. So this yep. puts away also some stress to have this knowledge that this is a fact. But I also, mm-hmm. For myself, I didn't want to be related or that I have to rely on this possibility, but it's good to know. But I never used it. mm-hmm. So, I had to use it, luckily. And so, mm-hmm. but I think I'm, from my personal experience, I'm a quite optimistic person. I always believe in the good. And I think this is mm-hmm. also, because when you're always worrying, then you attract the bad things. And if you believe in the good things will happen in your life, then they will manifest. That's my, I'm convinced that this is a truth, or I experienced it like this, fortunately.
Yeah. What Yeah. Well, and if you have experience like that, that is the truth.
It's right? my truth.
That is how your life has played out. Yeah, man. So I think that's very important. So this is, so early 2000s, you're working a couple days a week, you're doing lessons, you're doing gigs, and you're also starting a family.
Yes.
Correct? Like how? How, Jürgen? How are you doing all of this, man?
when my kids were small or young, I really enjoyed also the time because I had the time to see my kids growing up because I don't have a 9-to-5 daily job and have to leave in the morning and I come back late in the evening. So I also could support my wife, education and everything and family life. And yeah, sometimes it was hard to get the time also to practice or to for the musical projects. And and I had also crisis and I split also, I got divorced after some years because one problem was that she didn't understand the musical life in the whole. And I always had to face, what you do is no work, it's fun, and like this, but she, I earned my money also with this, but sometimes when you have a rehearsal and why you have to go, because you don't get anything for this rehearsal, why don't play gigs, but she didn't, that it, you need both. Otherwise it will not work.
Yeah.
And after some time, it was a sad situation for sure, but it is what it is. But I continued and now I'm married second time and my first kids from the first relationship, they are now 22 and 20 or 23 now because
are they musicians?
My daughter, she sings and plays the guitar. Only hobby, but she has also some Spotify releases already.
I was about to say if they are musical, you certainly know how to get them involved in the scene if they want to be.
Yeah, and my son he plays the piano, but I asked him because I knew very good piano players. playing with me, but he never wanted to get a teacher. He learned it by YouTube and YouTube Academy. None of them chose the path to be a musician,
Which is okay. This lifestyle we choose
completely okay.
It's not always easy.
As I said before, also for me, I never intended to be a musician, and suddenly I earned my living. All things I have done was connected to music, and it happened.
Which is so incredible in the way that, the amount of experiences that you're able to have as a full-time musician. Because when I think back to musicians in the 70s, 80s, 90s, even 2000s, I always just thought that it was a singular path of either be a studio musician or be a performing musician. I didn't necessarily think about all of these other avenues. And from 2010 till now, it's like we have so many options that we can pursue to drive revenue. And but you were doing that before social media, infusing The ability to be a music therapist, to teach lessons, to do live gigs, like it's incredible that you had already had that entrepreneurial mindset, you know, back in the 2000s, early 2000s, which is incredible.
Yeah, the fun thing or fun fact was my first saxophone students I got. It was not social media, but I really experienced the development of the internet. My first internet connection was a CompuServe with a telephone modem, which you had to wait and half an hour for a megabyte or something like this. Yeah. But I had I made an own website and I put a Vita of me and my projects on it, and I wrote that I had saxophone education or saxophone lessons with my teacher. And the fun thing was that if you at that time when you Googled, or at the time I think it was Netscape or was the search machine or Alta Vista. And when people were typing in saxophone Unterricht, saxophone lessons, Vienna, my site showed up in the first five listings. And
great.
So I got telephone calls. Hey, I'm searching for a teacher. Can you give saxophone lessons? And and I didn't expect it. Was also like a gift, or I didn't expect it, and it suddenly happened. Yeah.
How incredible. Yes. Wow. 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 Well, Jürgen, I thank you for taking us through your full story, man. And what an exciting journey it has been. So now I want to talk about lo-fi. So how did you had all of these wonderful experiences? You already had the entrepreneurial mindset of being able to drive revenue from different facets within music. When did you discover the lo-fi scene?
I discovered it 2021. I was a little bit late to the party because I think you guys started 2019 or 2020. It was the ending or middle of the pandemic, I think. Yeah, 2021, I think it started getting better already. And I don't know what was my first I don't know if I read something about in newspaper, or but I listened to the music and I realized that there is a big success and this music is rocketing through the roof. And for me, it was, that sound I know already, because in the 1990s, I was very interested in trip hop, and we had also in Vienna a very good scene, electronic music. Maybe some people might know Kruder and Dorfmeister, because they also got internationally renowned, and Jihan and Kaimian, and it was this Vienna electronic sound, and it was very jazzy and chill sound. And when I listened to the first lo-fi tracks, actual lo-fi tracks, I was thinking, hey, I've done this back at the beginning or in the 90s, or I know also these guys and I have been on the concerts and so on. And it's not so difficult to produce. And I had no gigs due to the pandemic. Everything was on pause. Yeah. And I was thinking, let's try it. And then I discovered your podcast, and it was really, I think I today I read our conversation on Instagram, the first contact, and because I wrote you, thank you for your great podcast, and it's a big inspiration and also a source of knowledge and whom to listen and to know musicians' interesting stories and and also very valuable information about labels and everything. And I was soaking it up like a sponge. Because that's a thing I think which describes me or is very important for my character. I'm always open for new things, or when I find something in the internet which interests me, I really dig deeper and I want to know it more and I want to do something actively with it, not only consuming the information, but why not doing myself trying out how this will work out for me. And so I started, and I had not really big expectations, but I, as we wrote, first I only did beats and I wasn't using the saxophone. And then I realized there are so many great beat makers. But there are not so many saxophone or instrumentalists in this. And this is a skill I can put on the market. And you said, that's the best thing. Do it like an instrumentalist. And it worked out. And I collaborated so many great musicians and beat makers from all over the world. And as you, in your first response, you said, and because I asked you, and how can I find labels? Because at that time, I had no contact to a label at all. And you told me, just collaborate. And when then the tracks get onto the labels, then you get the contact. And then the next track you do, and this worked out perfectly. And
how special. Jürgen, I'm almost tearing up, man, because it's so special. Because first your entrance into the scene, it's exactly like mine. It's exactly like Gosan's. It's exactly like Hoffy Beats. We were instrumentalists that were playing live gigs. The pandemic happened, and then all of a sudden, we have to find a new avenue to create art. And I, thinking about how things just worked out, like when it was March of 2020, we had just been, for Crystal Grid, we had just been traveling for gigs. All of a sudden, the world shuts down, and it was an immediate transition for me to offer my saxophone services to other beat makers. And I don't know where the idea came from, because before the pandemic, I was listening to lo-fi and jazz hop, and it was particularly Koi Pond, Cloud Chord, and Soul Food Horns. I was listening to that album, and I was like, wow, what a magnificent album. And that was really the start of it for me. And then as soon as the pandemic happened, we had a stimulus check that went out in the US. And so I utilized that money to hire a team of virtual assistants to collect a bunch of information on beat makers. I had them essentially do data research and data collection. And I just say, hey, give me a list of artists that are on lo-fi beats and jazz vibes and these Spotify editorial playlists. And if they have more than 100,000 monthly listeners, include their Instagram link. And then I just used that and reached out and said, hey, I'm a saxophonist. I'd love to record for you. And that's what I did. And it worked, man. Well, and everything. And I just shared with you, the process that I had utilized, and to hear that you just took those suggestions and did it, and now you're over 400,000 monthly listeners, and you have riffs, you've been able to collaborate with so many talented artists is incredible. And I remember, I think it was because Ale Filman and I are close, and I saw that you had released a tune with him, and maybe that was the first time I had seen Lo-Fi Sax as like an artist profile, and I was like, oh, this is perfect. I was like, it's perfect, straight on the money.
Yeah,
Lo-Fi
it's very
Sax.
Generic.
Here we go.
But it was available, no, well, and so I took it.
Yes. Well, I think rather than generic, I think I would call it targeted.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I remember when I saw the name, I was like, that's perfect. That is the perfect name. And so, Jürgen, I'm just so grateful that, one, you found the podcast and just how all of this has evolved. And I think this podcast has brought me so much more joy than I ever could have anticipated. I had no idea what this podcast would turn into. And to be able to share conversations with artists all over the world and to in turn be able to help artists through these conversations is incredible. And I just didn't know, I had no idea that was going to exist. And like your story today, like there's undoubtedly going to be somebody that listens to your story and who knows how it's going to impact them, whether it be them getting into music therapy or them maybe thinking twice about the touring life and going like, ooh, maybe that won't, maybe if I'm seeking happiness, maybe it'll add some joy, but that won't necessarily be the
when
answer.
When you're young, it's great. But when you get older, I realized during the pandemic shutdowns, afterwards, when the things open up, I don't have this necessity to go out and play live so much. I really enjoy staying at home with my family, lying on the couch, and or doing some productions here in my room. And because I don't know if I'm getting older and lazy, but on the other hand, I made these experiences, and I would recommend everybody who had has the chance to do it, do it. Don't be afraid of it. Mm-hmm. Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't like it anymore, you can stop it. And that's, I think, very important. It doesn't depend on your age. When I was younger, I hang out often with older people. And you mentioned the electro swing things I did. This was in 2011 around. That was my first, I was only a band musician, and suddenly I was also DJ. And I was DJing, playing the saxophone simultaneously, and was also touring all over Europe, playing electro swing things, and
great,
yeah. But and also organizing big parties here in Vienna and so on. So I also did this, but it was also on a decline somehow, and it was also good for me. I wasn't sorry that it stopped or it was going less, because I also realized, I would continue in this thing, maybe it would be hard, or you feel I'm not so burning for it anymore, and it's a good thing that changes happens, and take the chances as you see them, and don't be sorry if something doesn't work out. Next thing will happen.
Such great advice. And so Jürgen, so when you're, let's say you're, man, a few months into this lo-fi scene, you're listening to episodes of the podcast and you're like, okay, well, I'm a saxophone. I think I could follow that strategy and I'll just try to collaborate with a bunch of people and that'll in turn create more connections. Like, kind of walk us through your thought process when it actually started to work. Like when you got your first 100,000 monthly listeners and then like 200,000 monthly listeners, like what was going through your head when all of this was happening and you're on Instagram and you're talking to artists from all over the world? Like what's going through your head?
At the beginning, I was a little bit intimidated by these numbers, and I, I was really hesitating to contact somebody who has over 100,000 monthly listeners with my thousands monthly listeners. But I realized that the response was always very positive, and or also I got responses, because this is also not in every scene. I think that the people are so communicative and they respond when they get some messages. And it was crazy, because I think it was on Christmas 2021, when Fifth Avenue was released, it was released before Christmas. And on Christmas, I got the notification that it gets on Jazz Vibes. And suddenly...
A great Christmas present.
This was... I don't know how I connected with Simber. It's an Italian producer. And and he asked me... He has something to release, and he's missing out. Or he asked me if I can play the saxophone, and yes, I did it. And yeah, and suddenly this track went up. And the fun or the strange thing was, I was always expecting after 2 months it will be dropped from the playlist, and then the numbers go down again. But this track stayed on Jazz Vibes over 12 months. This was really crazy.
Great.
And this was the fundament. And on this, I could build the next... And also my confidence in myself or in that what I was doing grew. I have to be honest, I don't do it very consistently. It's more in phases, because sometimes I feel, other things are consuming my attention. And so I don't do so much posting or in a lo-fi thing. And then it comes again back, or the inspiration comes, or an interesting collaboration, and then I'm really motivated to do it. And the nice thing is that I have my salary from my job. So again, it's not I'm not in the stress to press on too much to that I have success or I must have this. This is quite good also for the mental health, that I can act quite relaxed, because that's also one thing. After this Fifth Avenue track dropped from Jazz Vibes, my numbers were going down again, and I was thinking, and it's funny, even if you say, it doesn't measure, it doesn't say anything about the quality, or but it hurts a little bit. And then I got again, actually I think I have 2 tracks on lo-fi beats, and this was this great next step on, and told me or taught me that things go down, they will go up again, and just have doing your thing and hoping for the best, and it will happen.
Well, Jürgen, I think that's a perfect inspirational note to end this on, and I can't thank you enough for coming on to the podcast and sharing your story, and it's truly an honor to have been able to meet you and share this conversation, man. And I look forward to working with you and watching the continued growth. And we'll have to get you back on the podcast, man, because this was really special. This was really, really special.
Thank you for your inspiration and your work, because I think without you, I wouldn't be sitting here and telling this story.
Yeah, well, it's my honor, man. It's definitely, it's one of those things, like you were saying, of it just happened. Mm-hmm. It really just happened. And it just has continued to happen. It's turned into its own thing now. And it's a, I just feel lucky that I get to be sitting here sharing a conversation with you and artists all over the world. And since you're in Vienna, have you met up with Mike from Staub Audio Engineering?
Sure. It was also your recommendation, and I asked him to do the mastering for several tracks, and I met him also personally, and
awesome.
He's really a great guy. Yeah.
How cool. Oh my goodness. Well, he's one of the best. One of the kindest people I've ever met. That's so cool that you guys were able to meet up in person. That's awesome. Wow. Okay. Incredible. So Jürgen, if people want to reach out and work with you, or they want some saxophone recorded on their tracks, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
The best way is with Instagram. Because I'm also on Discord, but to be honest, I don't spend so much time there, and Instagram is the most direct channel to reach me, and I answer every request. That's guaranteed.
great man, awesome. Well, Jürgen, to everybody listening, I'll put Lo-Fi Sax Instagram. I'll make sure to put that in the bio, so it's just one click away. And Jürgen, I can't thank you enough for coming on here and sharing the story, man. And I'm grateful to have played a role in your journey, and I'm excited for us to work even more closely moving forward.
Yeah, it was awesome. My pleasure to be here, and it was also a goal. When I first heard your podcast, I was also thinking, maybe someday I will manage to be also talking to you directly. And so,
how cool, man. How cool. Well, yes. Goal accomplished. Goal accomplished, Jürgen. How special, man. Wow. Well, thank you, everybody tuning in. Thank you for listening, and of course for supporting the podcast. And Jürgen, thanks again. And we'll leave it there. Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Bye.